You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire. A court orders NSO Group to hand over their source code. The Five Eyes reiterate warnings about Avanti products. Researchers demonstrate a generative AI worm. Fulton County calls Lockbit's bluff. SMS codes went unprotected online. Golden Corral serves up a buffet of personal data. Ransom demands continue to climb. A U.S. senator calls on the FTC to investigate auto industry privacy practices. Dressing up data centers. Our guest is Dominic Rizzo, founder and director of Open Titan and CEO at Zero Risk, discussing the first open source silicon project to reach commercial availability. And cops can't keep their suspects straight. It's Friday, March 1st, 2024, the first day of Women's History Month. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is your CyberWire Intel Briefing. A U.S. court has mandated Israeli firm NSO Group, creators of the Pegasus spyware, to hand over its source code to WhatsApp. Back in 2019, WhatsApp accused NSO of targeting 1,400 of its users with Pegasus, which allows for extensive surveillance without detection. Despite NSO's appeal citing U.S. and Israeli restrictions, the court ordered the disclosure of all spyware active from April 29, 2018 to May of 2020, excluding client identities or server details. This ruling marks a significant legal win for the Meta-owned app. NSO Group has been widely criticized for enabling the surveillance of activists and journalists worldwide and was blacklisted by the Biden administration in 2021. The administration has also introduced global visa restrictions to combat the misuse of spyware like Pegasus, reflecting concerns over national security and privacy. The Five Eyes intelligence agencies from Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the UK, and the US have issued an urgent warning about the ongoing exploitation of vulnerabilities in Avanti products. Cyber threat actors are targeting Avanti Connect Secure and Avanti Policy Secure gateways. The vulnerabilities, rated from high to critical, could allow attackers to bypass authentication, craft malicious requests, and execute commands with elevated privileges. The advisory also highlights that Avanti's compromised detection tools failed to detect breaches, advising users to assume compromised credentials, hunt for malicious activity, and follow Avanti's patching guidance. Observers have noted that these ongoing notifications from intelligence organizations amount to an indirect recommendation to discontinue use of the affected Avanti products. Meanwhile, CISA has added a Microsoft streaming service vulnerability with a CVSS score of 8.4 to its known exploited vulnerabilities catalog, due to its exploitation of system privileges. Discovered by Thomas Imbert from Synactive through the Trend Micro Zero Day initiative, this flaw has seen widespread abuse following the release of proof-of-concept code. Federal agencies must remediate the vulnerability by March 21, 2024, and CISA recommends private entities also address this issue in their systems. Researchers have demonstrated a novel cyber threat with the creation of a generative AI worm capable of spreading across AI systems, such as OpenAI's ChatGPT and Google's Gemini. This AI worm, called Morris-2, can autonomously propagate from one system to another, stealing data or deploying malware. Developed by Ben Nassi and colleagues at Cornell Tech, Morris-2 can exploit AI email assistants to exfiltrate data from emails and disseminate spam, circumventing some security measures of ChatGPT and Gemini. The exploit utilizes adversarial self-replicating prompts, akin to traditional cyber attack methods, to manipulate AI responses for malicious purposes. The research, which was conducted in controlled settings, underscores the emerging security risks within AI ecosystems, especially as AI applications gain autonomy in performing tasks. The researchers have reported their findings to Google and OpenAI. The Lockbit ransomware group claimed online that Fulton County, Georgia, had paid a ransom to prevent the publication of stolen data. County officials insist no payment was made. Now, security experts suggest Lockbit was bluffing, likely having lost the data during recent U.S. and U.K. law enforcement seizures of the gang's servers. Originally threatening to release Fulton County's data, Lockbit removed the county from its victim list without clear explanation. The FBI and UK's National Crime Agency had earlier disrupted Lockbit's operations, casting doubt on the group's capabilities. Despite re-emerging with new domains, Lockbit's credibility is questioned, with analysts suggesting this episode could signify the end of the Lockbit brand, pointing to possible desperation or an attempt to maintain affiliate confidence after significant operational setbacks. YX International, an Asian tech company providing global SMS routing services, inadvertently exposed a database without password protection, revealing one-time security codes and password reset links for users' accounts on platforms like Facebook, Google, and TikTok. Discovered by security researcher Anurag Sen, the database contained sensitive information, including two-factor authentication codes and internal email addresses. Despite the inherent security benefits of two-factor authentication, SMS-based codes can be less secure, susceptible to interception or accidental exposure. The database, with records dating back to July of 2023, was secured after TechCrunch alerted YX International, but the company couldn't confirm the duration of the exposure or if unauthorized access occurred. A report from Arctic Wolf reveals a 20% year-over-year increase in median initial ransom demands in 2023, reaching $600,000. Sectors like legal, government, retail, and energy face demands of $1 million or more. Manufacturing, business services, and education and nonprofits top the victim list. The report underscores cyber criminals' growing aggression, exploiting mainly pre-2022 vulnerabilities. Arctic Wolf notes that by focusing on 10 specific vulnerabilities, organizations could significantly enhance cybersecurity. The silver lining is improved organizational resilience, with 71% managing partial recovery from backups, aiding negotiation leverage. Insurance mandates for modern data protection and law enforcement's increasing adeptness at identifying cyber syndicates also contribute to a proactive stance against ransomware. Golden Corral, an American buffet restaurant chain and my father's favorite place in the world to eat out, announced a data breach affecting over 180,000 individuals after a cyber attack in August. Hackers accessed the company's systems between August 11th and 15th, compromising data of current and former employees and their beneficiaries. The breach disrupted corporate operations, prompting notification to federal law enforcement and efforts to enhance security measures. The stolen data includes names, social security numbers, financial and medical information, among others. Golden Corral has begun notifying affected individuals and advises vigilance against identity theft. The breach's details were disclosed in a filing with Maine's Attorney General. Senator Edward Markey criticized major automakers for their vague responses to his questions regarding data privacy practices and has called on FTC Chair Lina Khan to investigate. Markey's dissatisfaction stems from inadequate transparency on how these companies handle privacy protections, consent for data collection, and data sharing for commercial benefits. Despite automakers claiming to offer consent options to consumers, only one disclosed the consent rate, and most only delete data when legally required. Concerns were also raised about excessive data collection, potential loss of vehicle functionality without consent, and past cyber attacks. The industry's practice of sharing data with law enforcement under legal orders was noted, but the criteria for such sharing remain ambiguous for some. Markey's appeal to the FTC coincides with the FCC's increased scrutiny over connected car services. Data centers, essential yet often unobtrusive components of the digital infrastructure, face growing scrutiny over their appearance and integration into local communities. Author Dan Swinhoe has taken a closer look at this issue on the Data Center Dynamics website. As these facilities proliferate, there's increasing pressure from local authorities and residents for developers to invest in aesthetic improvements to make these large, typically windowless structures more visually appealing and less of an eyesore. Efforts include adding glass facades, incorporating green living walls, and using vibrant murals to soften their imposing presence. Despite these aesthetic enhancements, security remains paramount, with developers balancing the need to make data centers less fortress-like while ensuring they meet stringent security standards. Innovations in design and security, such as utilizing environmental features for protection and employing smart technology, are helping to integrate these critical facilities more harmoniously into their surroundings. This shift not only addresses community concerns, but also reflects a broader trend toward branding and visibility in the industry, marking a departure from the traditionally stealthy presence of data centers. Coming up after the break, my conversation with Dominic Rizzo, founder and director of Open Titan and CEO at Zero Risk. We're discussing the first open-source silicon project to reach commercial availability. Stay with us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. My guest today is Dominic Rizzo, founder and director of OpenTitan and CEO at Zero Risk. Our conversation centers on the first open source silicon project to reach commercial availability.
We describe it as either an open source secure silicon platform or ecosystem, or as an open source silicon root of trust. But you know, the root of trust being just one application of the secure silicon design collateral, design verification collateral that we've put together under the kind of umbrella of the OpenTitan project.
Well, take us through the history here. I mean, from the initial idea to actually being able to ship product, what are some of the steps that you and your colleagues have gone through here?
Oh, absolutely. So it actually starts way, way, way back, about a decade ago. In the first iteration, it was called the Honest Machines Project. And it takes time for these things to gestate. So fast forward about 5 years from that, so 5 years previous to today, when I actually started it as the OpenTitan project when I was at Google. So the goal there being that, you know, silicon security is kind of the best, kind of most foundational security, but it's hard. The implementations are inconsistent. So how do we sort of raise all boats across industry in a way that's transparent and trustworthy and non-proprietary? Well, we do that with open source, right? Now, there's a challenge there in that open source silicon has never really been done before in a successful kind of commercially viable way. There's things like RISC-V, but that's an open source specification. There's never really been an implementation before. So some of the things we did, starting from very, 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 very early on, is one, we partnered very closely with a host organization, a nonprofit in the UK called Low Risk CIC. It's a spin out of the Cambridge Computer Lab. And that was to kind of give it a neutral place where it could be gestated and grown and kind of bring everyone together in sort of a Silicon Commons environment. And then, you know, sort of philosophically, as we were laying out the principles of the project, we really relied on things like flexibility and quality. So flexibility in that it's all under a permissive Apache license, just a very vanilla, very commercially friendly open source license. And then the quality aspects are things like the documentation, the design verification collateral, all in addition to the digital design itself, right? So that's really one of the things that sets OpenTitan apart as a project, is it's the full package. It's the full silicon package, which we've now taken forward, developed over these last 5 years with a lot of partners, you know, Google, Gaseki and Devrient, Seagate, Western Digital, Rivos, among many, many others, including individual kind of independent contributors, and sort of pulled this together with our partners at Winbond and Nuviton and turned it into a chip, a commercially available chip that is, you know, now shown to be working. It's now silicon proven IP and is moving into mass production towards the end of this year.
And so what do you envision the use cases being for this chip?
The kind of one of the core kind of initial ones is you can think of this as a platform root of trust, something that you can integrate into a system where it can serve as this kind of independent below the operating system, trustworthy, a secure enclave of sorts, right? And that's where someone like Zero Risk comes in to really democratize access, to make this available to, for example, you know, providers of critical infrastructure, folks like that, right? But you can use this to really secure everything from commercial server designs to data center peripherals to laptops to, you know, even something as semi-ubiquitous as like a second factor fob, a multi-factor authentication device, right? So all of those things have security, or you want them to have security rooted all the way down in the silicon below any of the kind of very broad attack surfaces that software or the operating system presents.
So help me understand how this would be integrated into a broader system here. I mean, you mentioned it being kind of a secure enclave. That's a term I'm familiar with from the way that Apple uses it. Does it parallel that sort of use case?
I would say that the way my understanding, obviously I don't know for sure, is my understanding of the way Apple uses it, the kind of parlance around these things can be a little squishy at times. Mm-hmm. I would tend to call this more of a secure enclave is actually not the worst term for it, but it's actually probably closer to something like a secure element, which is a little bit smaller, kind of lower performance in a way of an environment, but one where you put like critical secrets, critical assets, things like that, right? Whereas I think some of the ones where we talk about confidential compute and things like that, those tend to be more moderate to very high performance, secure, isolated execution environments. But again, those tend to rely on a much smaller trusted compute base, much smaller attack surface, root of trust, or a secure element style device like the OpenTitan, where you store the kind of critical assets that then get leveraged up into that larger, more performant environment.
So again, you know, forgive my only slight, you know, understanding of what goes on under the hood with a project like this. But obviously you have, you know, silicon, which is baked in and does not change. And then, you know, things like, you know, field programmable gate arrays, which is another way to get something into hardware. Is the security element of this that it is immutable, that as it goes out into the field, I mean, that's what you have. And so that's where the trust comes from?
Yeah, that's absolutely one aspect of it, right? I mean, the ability to hit reset or trigger a remote reset and get yourself back to a known good state is a really, really critical property. And the only way to do that, the only way to do that with any sort of confidence is to root that in something immutable like the silicon itself, right? You can't do it at the firmware level because that can often be updated. And if that update mechanism is bad, you start to see, you know, terrible, persistent, pernicious kind of advanced persistent threats that just stay resident and possibly stay there quietly. You certainly can't do it at the operating system level. You know, there's this notion of sort of turtles all the way down. And really what you need to have is you need to have this kind of bottom turtle built out of rock solid silicon that you always know that it goes back to a known good state when you choose to put it in that state.
Can you share with us some of what went into the decision-making process here? I mean, I imagine it must have been challenging to decide what gets put in and what gets left out.
Oh, that's absolutely right. And again, that's where something like the low-risk foundation, where that's not actually a foundation, but the low-risk, it's called a community interest corporation, where they come in is they actually support the governance of an open-source project where all the partners kind of come together and commit resources, be they financial or personnel, and sort of support the overall effort. And so there's a really well thought out governance structure where there's a project director, which is myself, and that project director proposes a yearly roadmap. That roadmap gets voted on by a steering committee, which is composed of representatives that are all paying into the kind of communal support kitty. And then, you know, you start to have things like a technical committee where the people who are really the day-to-day experts doing a lot of the technical work are all evaluating proposals for what goes in and what goes out. And then from there, you have, you know, concentric rings of committers, people who can actually approve, who can review and approve code that goes in, because it can't be unconstrained, right? And that's a very actively monitored and pruned list to make sure that folks are really engaged in the project, that they have really have the kind of background and the kind of involvement necessary to make those decisions wisely. And then, of course, there are all the people who really do the work, you know, the contributors, right? So it's kind of these concentric rings of governance that lead to, you know, one, a lot of discussion. So it does take longer. But by the time you conclude those discussions, you end up with a sort of much more broadly accepted and acceptable implementation that meets the needs of all the individual partners, whatever their specific niche use cases might be.
So for folks who want to find out more about OpenTitan and the project itself, what's the best way for them to find out more?
I think the OpenTitan.org website is a great place to start. You know, also looking at some of the supporting companies and their involvement. You know, Low Risk, obviously, is the host organization. Folks like my company, Zero Risk, were obviously major contributors as well. And sort of seeing how these different organizations are both utilizing OpenTitan and kind of any sort of, you know, it's not the worst thing to read the press around it, right? We've really tried hard to. I just want to give a plug for your show. We've tried really, really kind of aligned with the goals of transparency and trustworthiness. We've really tried hard over the years to make this thing as accessible as possible, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the spirit of open source, right?
That is absolutely the spirit of open source. I would tend to call open source really, it's about conscious commoditization. It's about taking something that is broadly useful, broadly necessary, and really making it so that everyone can leverage it and benefit from kind of a ubiquitous open implementation. And we hope we've done that with OpenTitan.
That's Dominic Rizzo, founder and director of OpenTitan and CEO at Zero Risk. Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. And finally, the West Midlands Police found itself under the scrutiny of the UK's Information Commissioner's Office for mixing up the personal data of two individuals sharing the same name and birth date, violating the Data Protection Act of 2018. The errors, including sending officers to incorrect addresses and schools and sharing sensitive victim information with the wrong person, resulted from failure to distinguish between the data of crime victims and suspects, which seems like a pretty fundamental distinction to get right. The police force launched a new data quality policy, a Think Before You Link campaign, and compensated one of the affected individuals. The force has accepted the reprimand, implemented most of the recommendations, and continues to focus on data protection training and policy improvements. When I was a teenager back in the 80s, there was another Dave Bittner who attended the next high school over from mine. We would regularly get each other's phone calls. He was an avid golfer and I was a theater kid, so I would field questions about his tee times and he would get asked about rehearsal schedules. Each of us had the other's phone number memorized so we could help each other's friends connect with the right Dave Bittner. And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. Be sure to check out this weekend's Research Saturday and my conversation with Selena Larson from Proofpoint. We're discussing their research, Bumblebee Buzzes Back in Black. That's Research Saturday. Check it out. We'd love to know what you think of this podcast. you can email us at cyberwire@n2k.com. We're privileged that N2K and podcasts like The Cyberwire are part of the daily intelligence routine of many of the most influential leaders and operators in the public and private sector, as well as the critical security teams supporting the Fortune 500 and many of the world's preeminent intelligence and law enforcement agencies. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. This episode was produced by Liz Stokes. Our mixer is Trey Hester, with original music by Elliot Peltzman. Our executive producers are Jennifer Iben and Brandon Karpf. Our executive editor is Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next week. And now, a word from our sponsor, Sixth Sense. Sixth Sense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks and optimizing operational efficiency. With Sixth Sense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly. To learn why enterprises choose Sixth Sense, visit sixthsense.com.